While the richer countries of the world watch their populations grow older, low-income and developing countries are experiencing something completely different.
Enhancing productivity is just central to sustaining economic growth and addressing these demographic shifts. But we also know from our research that gender equality and increasing women's participation in the workforce are key components of the productivity story.
So investing in things that help women get an education and stay healthy isn't only the right thing to do, it's building critical human capital.
And in the long run, you know, these kinds of investments can help ensure the sustainability of the pension system, reducing dependency ratios, and having more working age individuals contributing to the overall growth and stability of a country. Hi, I'm Lisa Kolovich. I'm a senior economist in SPR's Inclusion and Gender Unit.
Lisa Kolovich is also a co-author of a recent study that looks at how gender equality can help tackle demographic challenges.
All right, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So the one thing that really jumped out at me when reading through this paper was the data around old age dependency ratios and where those were headed. And I think this is a good place to start, given how it pretty much sets the groundwork for this research. So first, maybe explain what old age dependency ratios are and what the concern is about the current trends.
Great, thanks, Bruce. So, old age dependency ratios, put very simply, it's just the proportion of the elderly population, so people 65 and older, compared to the working age population, so those ages 15 to 64. And so many advanced economies, and increasingly some of the emerging markets too, are experiencing these significant increases in their old age dependency ratios. Mm-hmm. And so this trend is driven by, you know, higher life expectancy, lower birth rates, and what this is leading to is this growing proportion of elderly individuals compared to the working age population.
Right.
And so our latest research, which was done jointly with UNFPA in terms
of UNFPA?
The United Nations Population Fund.
I see.
Great. So we look at this in terms of the potential macroeconomic impacts and why is this old age dependency ratio so critical for us to think about at the fund. So this higher old age dependency ratio indicates a shrinking labor force, and that can lead to reduced economic productivity and growth. And so if we have fewer workers available to support economic activities, this potentially can also lead to labor shortages and increased wage pressures. Now, if we have an increasing proportion of elderly individuals, too, there are higher costs associated with pensions, with healthcare, and if we have fewer workers contributing to the tax base, this all combines to create rising fiscal pressures and makes the situation that much more challenging for countries to deal with. So this growing elderly population, too, they may require, you know, extensive social support systems, including, as I mentioned, healthcare, but also elder care services too. Mm-hmm. And this requires, you know, adequate funding to help ensure quality of life for all citizens.
Mm. And so the other driving force behind the research is, the extent to which the labor force is shrinking in advanced economies and growing pretty dramatically in low-income and developing countries. So how can these two, you know, fairly problematic scenarios offset each other, you know, in terms of the global economy?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, many of the advanced economies and emerging markets are experiencing shrinking labor forces and this increasing old age dependency ratio. But in contrast, what we see in low-income and developing countries is that there are large numbers of young entrants into the labor market. And so this in low-income and developing countries presents an opportunity to harness something we call the demographic dividend.
Right.
Now, these implications of the shrinking labor force in advanced economies and emerging markets, you know, over the past 60 years or so, this old age dependency ratio in these countries, it's more than doubled in advanced economies.
Wow.
And now stands right now at above 30%. But our projections are showing that by 2090, this ratio could reach 100%.
Wow.
So just huge challenges in these countries. Now, this puts increased pressure on economic output, sustainability of pension systems, and the effectiveness of monetary policy. But on the other hand, in low-income and developing countries, what we see is this declining young age dependency ratio, but there's still substantial population growth.
Right.
So this trend presents opportunities for economic growth, but only if we have the right policies in place to help support education, health, and job creation. So you asked, how can these two scenarios potentially offset each other? Mm-hmm. And so this was the focus of our research. Now, we can think about scenarios where migration might play a role, but that's often difficult for countries themselves to control. So what we looked at was, you know, what can countries do domestically to help support these trends? And what we know is there's a very large untapped pool of resources in many, many countries, and that's women. And so our research looks at how can we empower women, engage women in the labor force to help with these shifting demographic trends.
All right. So in both of those scenarios, the shrinking and the growing labor force, I mean, productivity is a core issue, right? I mean, you want more productivity to compensate in one scenario, and then you want more productivity to sort of get the full benefit from the other scenario. But how does gender per se fit into this, productivity story? Does more women in the labor force necessarily mean higher productivity, or is there something else that kicks in when more women are working?
Yeah, so productivity, again, working at the fund, it's a critical issue for us to think about in both of these scenarios, with the shrinking and with the growing labor force populations. So enhancing productivity is just central to sustaining economic growth and addressing these demographic shifts. So let me just start with the example of the aging populations in advanced economies, mm-hmm. where we face the shrinking labor force. In our analysis, we've run several scenarios to look at this, these impacts, and the results are pointing to a decline in outputs in many advanced economies and emerging markets, with some advanced economies potentially losing 25% of their GDP due to shrinking labor forces.
Wow.
So these higher old age dependency ratios are, as I mentioned, they're straining public finances, and they reduce the available workforce. So this necessitates higher productivity to help maintain economic growth and stability. But as I mentioned, many women, there's just this underutilized pool of resources. And if we can increase female labor force participation, this can help offset the decline in the working age population. And our analysis suggests that boosting female labor force participation can partly mitigate the GDP losses in advanced economies. And in emerging markets, it can actually significantly boost GDP. Now, in low-income and developing countries, this rapid population growth and this burgeoning young population are entering the labor market. So to ensure that these entrants have the proper tools that they need to succeed in the labor market, we need to see countries investing in education, in healthcare, and in job creation. And so research by my IMF colleagues looks at the potential macroeconomic impacts of education reforms.
Right.
What we see in Senegal, if we were to ensure that all children receive at least 5 years of education, this could boost GDP by 8%. In Nigeria, if we were to lift the level of education for girls, we could boost GDP by 5%. And we did some work in Niger as well, too, and we saw that in that country, we could boost GDP by 11%. But let me also note, too, that our work on Niger looks at the overall impact, too, on government finances. And what we see is that in terms of the tax revenues versus the spending that is needed to implement these policies, they actually end up paying for themselves, right? So this is something where we can boost productivity, we can boost economic growth, and we can see higher tax revenues, higher female labor force participation, all of this to eventually support greater economic growth and stability.
All right, so driving these demographic trends is fertility rates, which is another focus of this research, and how fertility rates tend to drop when women gain access to higher education. What have you learned in those terms?
So we looked at this from both sides. We looked at this in low-income and developing countries and also, too, in advanced and emerging markets. So let me start with the low-income and developing countries first.
Right.
So our research here looks at how fertility rates, what happens when we increase education. And what we see is that one additional year of female schooling can reduce fertility by 10%, especially when this is associated with secondary education. So again, really large changes from somewhat seemingly minor, changes in female education rates. In advanced economies, on the other hand, what we see is the correlations between income and fertility, that education and fertility, this correlation has turned from negative to positive. So we have higher fertility rates now for highly educated women in advanced economies. This, again, can help address the issues that we see in advanced economies. So on both sides...
The demographic issues.
Exactly, the demographic issues. For both sides here, if we invest in education, we can see positive impacts in terms of the key issues and challenges that the countries are facing.
And so these demographic trends, I mean, it may be more pronounced this time around, but we have seen there have been other periods where demographic trends have produced huge labor forces. And I'm thinking maybe East Asia in the late 20th century. What can we learn from what happened then?
Yeah, for sure. So these are really good case studies for us to think about in terms of how can we take lessons learned and best practices from other countries and apply them to the challenges that we face today. So you mentioned East Asia and India. When we think about those countries, we know that they experienced a period where there was the working age population grew faster than the rest of the population. And they were able to see significant economic benefits. And this is, again, the demographic dividend. Mm-hmm. So in India, there's research that shows that the demographic transition actually contributed to about 40 to 50% of per capita income growth since 1970. So again, really significant changes here, fueled by a larger workforce supporting fewer dependents. So what are some of the key lessons learned that we can take away from these kinds of examples? One thing I'd stress is that countries can't just rely on demographic shifts to operate in a vacuum and expect great results from there. We know that policies really do play a role. So let me just give a few examples of where we can think about policy interventions to help complement the demographic shifts that the countries are facing. So in low-income and developing countries, ensuring that women and girls have equal opportunities to education, have access to quality health care, this allows them to build human capital and, again, contribute to the overall economic growth and stability, enhancing productivity. We can also think, too, about ways to support fertility choices, reducing income inequality. All of this, again, helps boost GDP growth. Yeah. Policymakers, too, often want to think about how can we address the challenges that women face in terms of unpaid work. So how can we balance the time constraints that they face, but also the resource constraints that families often face? So making decisions regarding education, work, family life. And then there are two other macro-critical policy areas that we think policymakers can look at, and those are child marriage and family planning. And in the paper, we look at how child marriage, you know, this is incredibly high in some countries. In fact, in some countries, the rate of children that are married before the age of 15 is as high as 35%. And research from the IMF shows that there is a significant macroeconomic impact from having high rates of child marriage. We know that girls that are married young, there are severe effects on sexual and reproductive health, their mental well-being, and educational and economic outcomes. In fact, as I mentioned, that research by the IMF, if we were to end child marriage in low-income and developing countries, what we see is that there would be a long-term annual per capita GDP growth impact of 1 percentage point. So this is quite large.
Significant.
Yes. Yeah. And then if we think about investing in family planning, this can lead to lower fertility rates. It can change the age structure of a population, and it can help create that potential for the demographic dividend. For each dollar spent on meeting the unmet need for contraception, this can yield $120 in long-term economic benefits through lower infant and maternal mortality and increased economic growth. So again, just huge, huge impacts from addressing these needs.
All right. So you obviously have put a lot of time and effort. The team has put a lot of time and effort in this research. Where does it go from here? I mean, is the IMF actively working with countries to help them, you know, come up with these gender-efficient policies?
Yeah, so across the fund, this is busy times for us in terms of the work that we're doing on gender. In fact, we have our country teams have looked at gender issues in about a quarter of our membership so far. So more than 50 countries have addressed various gender issues that are macro-critical in each specific country context. Many of the cases have looked at labor force participation, and our country teams are offering policy advice, thinking about what are the drivers of gender gaps in labor force participation, and how can things like legal barriers, access to education, thinking about parental leave, female leadership, how does this play a role in helping boost female labor force participation? We, in our unit, the Inclusion and Gender Unit, the fund, we've been developing toolkits along with other departments across the fund. We have many, many tools, data sources, resources available for our country teams to actually think about how do you identify where macro-critical gender gaps exist, and also, too, how do you quantify the macroeconomic impact of these gender gaps. And then let me also note, too, that in terms of capacity development, our teams are very busy working on supporting our member countries through tailored technical assistance, through capacity development, workshops, trainings, peer learnings. And in fact, in terms of internal capacity development, we've developed a course that helps our economists learn about the macrocritical links between gender and economic growth. And then, too, let me just stress the importance of collaboration, right? This is something where, at the Fund, we approach this work from the macro angle, but we are not experts on sectoral issues, right? And so this is really where our partnerships with organizations like UNFPA, UN Women, World Bank, you know, ILO, so many others out there that have helped us build this work base, really help us think about how do we better design policies, not just from a macro angle, but from a sectoral and more micro angle. So we can know that education policies can have a role in terms of addressing demographic shifts, but we're not experts in designing education policies. And so we rely on our partners to help us think about how do we better tailor education programs in countries to help support the macroeconomic outcomes that we hope to achieve with our members.
Nice. I mean, IMF is not expert in all fields.
We are not. But again, that's why the importance of collaboration really plays a role here. And so we're very thankful and grateful, I think, to our partners who have helped us build a lot of the more tailored work that we're trying to put forward with our members.
All very interesting. Lisa Kolovich is a senior economist in the Strategy, Policy, and Review Department. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
Lisa Kolovich is part of the IMF's Inclusion and Gender team. You'll find their latest research on promoting gender equality and tackling demographic challenges at imf.org. And look for more IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X, what used to be Twitter, at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.